Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Marwan Crady, who is a professor at the Annenberg School of Communication at the University of Pennsylvania. He's an expert on Arab media and politics and was the founding director of the Arab Media and Public Life Project at American University. His books include Hybridity or the Cultural Logic of Globalization, Reality Television and Arab Politics, Contention in Public Life, and Arab Television Industries. Welcome to Background Briefing, Marwan Crady.
Good evening. Thank you.
And it seems that television has played a huge role both in the original revolution in Egypt 2 years ago and the current coup underway, in as much as, for example, just yesterday, Al Jazeera was ejected from the official press conferences held by the interim government with the urging and applause of their fellow journalists. And meanwhile, of course, Al Arabiya, the Saudi-owned channel, is acting as a kind of spokesperson for the Al Nur, the Salafist party. So it's hard for me not to separate the media from politics in what's happening in Egypt.
You're absolutely right. There's obviously a national political struggle going on between the supporters of the deposed President Morsi from the Muslim Brothers and the interim government, which was put in place by the military. And you can see the regional alignment with, you know, Saudi Arabia was among the first to congratulate Egypt on the change, on the deposing the president. And when the Saudis congratulated the new government in place, or the new authorities, or the change of the guard, so to speak, everybody knew that there was something going on in regional politics. Qatar was very, very supportive of the Muslim Brothers. The Saudis seemed to have taken advantage of the new, young, untested ruler of Qatar to support what's going on, and the media obviously reflect that. Actually, what I've been hearing from Egypt is that it was initiated, that asking the director, the head of the Bureau of Al Jazeera in Cairo to leave the room was initiated by the journalists, not by the interim government. And other journalists who were present refused to participate in the press conference until the Bureau chief left the room. And so there's very, very strong feelings against Al Jazeera in Egypt today. Al Jazeera has been very supportive of Morsi, of the deposed president, of the Muslim Brothers. And during the last few days, Al Jazeera did something that infuriated many Egyptians. It opened its microphone to people who were calling the Egyptian army by things like the Al-Sisi brigades, basically mimicking the way that the national armies and the regime armies in Syria were basically diminished by being called militias or brigades of so-and-so. And that really angered a lot of people, and I think that's why the vitriol towards Al Jazeera really went up a notch or two in the last couple of days.
And, of course, prior to this press conference, the offices were burned. So it would seem that the Egyptian people and if Egyptian journalists want Al Jazeera out of the press conferences, the feeling must be pretty pervasive, at least amongst those who do not support the Muslim Brotherhood. And after all, there were 22 million signatures on a petition asking for Morsi to leave.
Absolutely. And so, you know, there's very strong feelings against Morsi, although the technicalities of, you know, whether this was a coup or not is a different story. Nonetheless, he was a democratically elected president, so there's very strong feeling on both sides. But the other thing is that Al Jazeera really capitalized on the Egyptian revolution. They also launched, if you recall, the Al Jazeera Live Egypt, which was a public affairs channel that basically focused on Egypt. Well, what also happened in the last few days, several people working in that channel resigned. One of them very publicly on Facebook saying, "We're resigning because we object to the way the channel is covering Egyptian affairs." So it's become very, very controversial, as if Al Jazeera has become one of the big hot potatoes in Egyptian politics.
Well, by extension, of course, that means Qatar is. And you were mentioning earlier the ascension of the younger king, the son of the emir who just stepped down. I mean, everybody talks about Qatar punching above its weight, both in supporting the rebels in Syria and the influence that they've had through Al Jazeera. It seems like it's backfiring in Egypt. Is the son trying to distance himself from the father in terms of what appears to be unqualified support for the Muslim Brotherhood?
I don't believe so. It does seem that on this aspect, just like on other aspects of Qatari foreign policy, the son, all the signs indicate that the son will follow in the footsteps of his father. But I think what has been going on, the Saudis have never really loved the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood really offers an alternative model of Islamic governance than the one that exists in Saudi Arabia. So it is seen as a threat. If you look at the last year or so in the United Arab Emirates, which mirrors the Saudi perspective, they have been basically hunting down suspected members of the Muslim Brothers in the UAE with accusation of plotting to, against the government and coups and things of that sort. So I think there are major political forces, especially the Saudis, who have never been very happy with the Muslim Brotherhood being in charge in Egypt. After all, you know, the Saudi king made it very clear that he was devastated by the fact that his friend, who he called his friend, Hosni Mubarak, was deposed in the January revolution. So this is a continuation of regional politics, in a sense. And it, of course, Egypt is a major loss for the Qataris, and we don't know yet what's going to happen, but it does seem that the Saudi role is on the ascendant. And you can see this with the way, for instance, Al Jazeera is treated very differently than Al Arabiya,
which is the Saudi owned channel.
Yes, the Saudi channel, the Saudis do support the Al Nur party, which is a Salafi party in Egypt, whose basically point of view is quite similar to the dominant clerical political orientation in Saudi Arabia. And the Al Nur party, it has transpired, was part of a coalition of, you know, the liberals, the Tamarud group that basically came up with the petition and gathered the signatures, and they agreed to topple the Muslim Brotherhood government. They agreed to topple the president. So Al-Nur was part of these deliberations and actions against the elected president, ex-president of Egypt. But then they stepped back when the name of Al-Baradei was proposed to be, you know, the interim vice president or prime minister. I mean, all these things were in flux until very recently. Then the Al-Nur party stepped back and objected against Al-Baradei, who they seem to believe is too liberal for their taste. So Egyptian politics is very much in flux. It's very clear that there are shifting regional alliances. I do suspect that the Saudi role is growing. The Qatari role has diminished. But the verdict is not yet out. It's a situation that's very much in flux. We don't really know what's going to happen, and I think the media will continue to reflect that.
And again, I'm speaking with Marwan Crady, who's a professor at the Annenberg School of Communication at the University of Pennsylvania. He's an expert on Arab media and politics and was the founding director of the Arab Media and Public Life Project at American University. And his books include Reality Television and Arab Politics, Contention in Public Life, and Arab Television Industries. So when the actual coup was announced, of course, with the General Sisi, the head of the army, standing next to him were representatives of the Al-Nur party. So the Saudi fingerprints are definitely on this coup, if indeed it turns out to be a coup, in a reactionary sense. A lot of Egyptians I've spoken to over there, including some of the organizers of the original revolution, just told me a couple of days ago that, you know, the police, of course, never forgave the liberals for the revolution. They've sabotaged Morsi by simply not doing their job. They're probably behind the killing of these supporters of the Brotherhood. And there's a lot of people in Egypt who feel that the role of Saudi Arabia is quite prominent in all of these people, including the acting head who spent about 10 years in Saudi Arabia, the person now in charge. And as you pointed out earlier, the Saudis do not want this alternative model of the Muslim Brotherhood to get any traction. And they essentially want the democratic experiment in Egypt to fail. I mean, that's a fair assessment, isn't it?
Yes, it is a fair assessment. But I think in terms of the media scene, the other force, the other source of contention during the rule of Morsi is Egyptian artists, actors and soap operas, singers, movie stars, for the most part were up in arms against what they call the Ikhwanization of the media or the brotherization of the media, which is a kind of quote-unquote purification campaign to bring the media basically closer to the image of a kind of a good, virtuous Muslim society, the way the Muslim Brotherhood believes. And if Al-Nur is going to be ascendant now, I think this is going to be another source of contention, where media, especially television, will continue to play a dominant role, because Al-Nur is as conservative in terms of a kind of a moralistic, socially moralistic view on society, if not more so than the Muslim Brotherhood. So I believe we're still going to see a lot of culture wars, so to speak, parallel to the political struggles going on in the next phase, if the Islamists of Al-Nur, who are close to the Saudis and who have this moralistic view on culture, on public culture, on media, do in fact prevail and do manage to get a share of power in whatever government is going to see the light soon.
Well, but the other player, and the dominant player, of course, is the army. And then you have the recalcitrant Mubarak-era police, and you also have the intelligence services.
Yes.
Because under Mubarak, Egypt was a bit like East Germany was with the Stasi. God knows how many people they had on the police payroll. And those people, of course, have essentially sabotaged the Brotherhood's government from day one. But the people who've really, I think, done more damage to on a daily basis to the Brotherhood, apart from the fact that Morsi himself is boneheaded and King Abdullah of Jordan described him as exceedingly stupid, he, of course, has made a mess of things. But my understanding is that the real culprit undermining democracy and the Morsi government has been the old guard media, the Mubarak area media, who have just been from day one saying the sky is falling, since the revolution.
Yes, I mean, that is true to some extent. So there are many people who were unhappy with the ascendance of the Muslim Brotherhood, and that includes some of the media owners. Don't forget that in the late Mubarak years, the government allowed the creation of privately owned satellite television channels. For the longest time, Egypt is a big developmentalist state where the state controlled all the means of communication, at least the electronic ones. In the last few years of under Mubarak, they allowed the creation of these privately owned channels that were owned by people who were very close to the regime, and in many cases close to Gamal Mubarak, Hosni Mubarak's son. And these obviously have people with certain political sympathies. Many of them do reflect the prevailing opinion in the media industries, in culture, in the arts in Egypt, that tends to be vehemently anti-Brotherhood. So they were crying wolf from day one, absolutely. And they never really accepted the legitimacy of the government. I mean, people like Bassem Youssef, who basically made a career out of mocking Morsi, and Morsi was very, very, very good source for comedy and ridicule. What many observers are saying now, let's see if these people will be able to mock the new government in the same way. And so there is a sense that maybe the remnants of the Mubarak regime are coming back, but nobody knows what exactly is going on. The media played a role, the police played a role, the armed forces remain a decisive, if not the decisive actor in the situation. And the situation is still very fluid.
Well, we don't have to look back very far to the consequences of the private television network in Egypt that broadcast that incredibly divisive and scandalous film that was made out here in Los Angeles by some Coptic Christian criminal that nobody in the world's ever seen, except it became, of course, celeb amongst religious fundamentalists. It led to riots in front of the American embassy, and then, of course, by extension, led to the deaths of the American diplomats in Benghazi. So that, I think, is an example. I mean, the decision to run that heretofore unknown film was made obviously by the owner of that private television network.
Yes.
In Egypt.
Yes, and this is what happened when a very strong state, a dictatorship, collapses. At a time when starting a media operation, whether a television channel, a newspaper, has become cheaper and cheaper, easier with the existence of a large class of people who are qualified media workers, immediately after the revolution, you have a kind of mushrooming of television channels, many of them religious, many of them quite sectarian. And what these do, of course, they compete for public opinion. They compete for public. They try to mobilize their own core publics, and they try to gain other followers. And the best way to do that is by putting on the air these very sensationalistic, attention-grabbing films and videos, and that's why talk shows became very important, comedy became very important, because these are the kind of things that attracted people's attention at a time when everybody was struggling to mobilize a public and turn it into a political force.
So at this point, what's your sense, not so much as a media analyst, Marwan, but as a political analyst, of will there be a backlash in favor of the Brotherhood because of the brutal treatment of just gunning down those kids, which is, I think, pretty much at the hands of the shadowy police forces and intelligence people that I had the other day on Jawad Nabulsi, one of the leaders of the original revolution, and he was saying he talked to the Brotherhood people and said, you know, you've got to put these guys on trial. You've got to bring them to account for what they've done. And if you don't, they're going to come back to bite you. And now they're moving against the Brotherhood, and but sooner or later they'll move against the liberals too, right?
Absolutely, and this is—I think this is a very big problem. You know, of course, the worst-case scenario that everybody fears is the Algeria scenario, where you have the military deposing a democratically elected Islamist government, and then a civil war ensues, and hundreds of thousands are killed in blood and gore for years. This hasn't happened yet, although, you know, the number of dead yesterday suggests that this could, more events, more incidents like that could trigger a protracted bloody battle. But if you put yourself in the shoes of the Muslim Brothers, they ran for elections. By all accounts, the elections were as clean and as competitive and as fair as they could have been under the circumstances. They won the elections. They were given only a year to rule. Now, on the one hand, yes, Morsi made many, many mistakes. The economy is falling apart. He didn't do much, or maybe couldn't do much. He didn't really bring about civilian control over the police and armed forces. All these mistakes, he was bullheaded. He wasn't into including opponents in decision-making and all those things. Yes, that's right. But he was still democratically elected. And I think a coup of that sort could really give credence to the Islamist claim that no matter what they do, they will not be allowed to rule. Their opponents would say, you know, the one man, one vote, one time, that once they take over, these Islamist party will never allow democracy. Well, what we see happen is we see other forces not allowing the Muslim Brothers to rule democratically. And I think that is a problem.
Well, that's the Algerian model, right? I say that's the Algerian model.
That's the Algerian model. That's the worst case scenario that I'm afraid might happen. I don't know what the odds are, but I think the only solution is to really include the Muslim Brothers in the decision making. The way the coup happened, you know, it's this very old style coup where you had police and military people moving onto the television channels, all the media that was with the brothers, with the Muslim Brothers, shutting them down. And I'm afraid that those are the kinds of action that will trigger a backlash. If in the coming weeks we see the Muslim Brothers included some kind of a negotiated settlement where there is an acknowledgement on the one hand that there might not be a going back to Morsi as president, but on the other hand, as a democratically elected president, there was a popular mandate. There's a large section of the Egyptian population that supports this political party and this view of the world, that they should be included in the government. I'm afraid if that does not happen, chances of civil war occurring in Egypt will begin to grow again.
And if these elections happen and the Muslim Brotherhoods are included and it's fair as it was the last time round, although there was some, because of the nature of the runoffs, the socialist guy came in a very, very close second, close third. And it would seem that this might be an opportunity for the liberals and the original revolutionaries to get their act together, because if the Islamists are split between al-Nur and the Brotherhood, they should win.
Yep. Yes. And I mean, The problem is now al-Nur has shown its face as willing to make deals against other Islamists. So that's very clear. So we cannot assume that the two major Islamist political groups in the country will be united.
Right, but the Saudis will pour in boatloads of money as they did last time.
Yes, but if there are elections, I don't think a potential win by the Muslim Brotherhood can be dismissed. It could happen, and it might very well happen, even if Al-Nur doesn't support them. It will be a very close election. That seems to be for sure. If it's clean, if it's transparent, if it's fair, and imagine if another Muslim Brotherhood president is elected. What would happen then? I think that's a question that's worth asking.
Sure. Well, just in closing, Marwan Crady, what is your sense then of the U.S. role or the lack of it? It seems to me that the U.S. in many ways, even though the men on the street in much of the Arab world see the Americans' conspiracy behind everything, and they even in Egypt have been showing posters of Obama with Morsi's beard superimposed,
yes,
saying that the Americans foisted the Muslim Brotherhood on us, which seems to be an absurd notion. Ann Patterson, of course, getting a lot of criticism. What's your sense of what the Americans can do?
Well, I mean, I don't know what they can do. Sometimes the best thing the U.S. government can do is to stay away from things, which, of course, it won't be able to because of the kind of the momentum of U.S. influence and the shifting alliances going on and all kind of geopolitical considerations. You have the Suez Canal. You have, Egypt is not a country that can be abandoned by the major power of the world, including the U.S. But I think what's funny is if you look at both pro-Muslim brothers and anti-Muslim brothers, if you look at the demonstrations, both sides had signs and photos accusing the other of working with Obama, accusing the other of being helped by the American. And so in many sense, the American government now is in a no-win situation. Whatever it does, it has to do, it cannot do it publicly. Everybody knows that the armed forces in Egypt have pretty tight relations with the U.S. After all, there's, you know, the Camp David Accord. A lot of money comes by way of Egypt to keep the peace agreement with Israel. And those are very important considerations and calculations in U.S. foreign policy. And so when the military says we're deposing the president, I don't think it's a conspiracy theory to consider that the U.S. might have played a role, maybe not an active role, maybe not a decisive role, but at the very least an acquiescent or supportive role in what happened. I think that's a very fair assessment that a lot of people are making. But the fact that both sides are accusing the other of working with the American doesn't bode well for the margin of maneuver that the U.S. government has at the moment.
Well, Marwan Crady, I thank you so much for joining us here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Marwan Crady, who's a professor at the Annenberg School of Communication at the University of Pennsylvania. He's an expert on Arab media and politics and was the founding director of the Arab Media and Public Life Project at American University. His books include Hybridity or The Cultural Logic of Globalization, Reality Television and Arab Politics, Contention in Public Life, and Arab Television Industries. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about how the proxy war in Syria appears to be spreading to Lebanon. شهداء ومهمهم شي يموتوا بيها وينزفوا شهداء.